You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Jonathan Shroud. I represent the appellants, Dr. Mayer, in his practice. Mr. Chief Justice, if I could reserve 2 minutes.
Two.
Thank you, sir. Your Honors, this case involves what we believe is perhaps the most fundamental issue of law that the Court might entertain in quite a long time. The underlying case involved a claim of medical negligence. The allegation was that the defendant, Dr. Mayer, performed one surgical procedure and during that procedure unintentionally operated at a level of the spine that was adjacent to a level that he intended to operate on. There was no claim of any intentional conduct by the doctor. There was actually multiple admissions on the record that this was negligence. Nobody was claiming any intent. Nonetheless, the plaintiff dropped their claim of negligence and proceeded on a claim of battery, by putting the word technical in front of it, thereby arguing that they could get around and not have to deal with the established legislative method for handling medical malpractice cases under the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act. The plaintiff also sought in their complaint damages based solely on negligent acts and omissions. So this was always intended to be a claim of negligence. But for some reason, the negligence claim was dropped, the battery claim proceeded, perhaps because the plaintiff understood they would have an easier route to the end if they didn't have to put up any expert testimony regarding standard of care and proximate cause.
Well, maybe it was because they read our decisions in Pugsley, Woodbury, and Washburn, and realize that while this may be a fundamental principle of law, it seems to be a very well-established one.
Well, I don't respectfully, Judge, I think, and as we pointed out, those cases that establish that there is such a thing as a technical battery always say that it has to be under proper factual conditions and circumstances. Washburn, Pugsley, and Woodbury are completely different in the most fundamental aspect from this case. This case has an admission of no intent, of no intentional conduct, only negligence. In Washburn, there were two separate surgeries that went on at the same time, but there was a surgery on the intended level of the spine, and then there was a surgery on the unintended level of the spine. And the question was a jury question: was there intent to commit the second, to perform the second surgery?
Well, let's focus on Woodbury. How is the performance of a partial mastectomy, when the patient had only consented to a biopsy, any different than the facts in this case, where the patient consented to an operation at one level of the spine and the surgeon operated on a different level of the spine?
Because in Woodbury, Mr. Chief Justice, the surgery that was performed was different than, intentionally different than. He didn't accidentally do a partial mastectomy. He performed a surgery intending to do something. Maybe he had his medical reasons why he was intending to do it, I don't know, but intending to do something that was fundamentally different than what the consent was for. There is a difference, or at least the plaintiff can argue, there is a difference between a biopsy and a partial mastectomy.
Well, there's a difference between operation at one level of the spine and operation at another, too.
There is, but in this case, the operation, it was the same operation with the doctor believing and intending to perform the consented-to procedure. Nobody said in Woodbury that doctor intended to perform the consented-to procedure. He performed a different procedure.
Let me ask you this. If that's the case, if the consent was to perform an amputation of the left leg and the doctor performed an amputation of the right leg,
yes.
How would that come out under your theory?
It would come out against the doctor.
Negligence or a battery?
No, that would probably be understood or accepted as a battery.
Well, then how do you draw the line? If you're making the argument that this isn't a battery and you're admitting that that is a battery, where does the line get drawn?
Because there are certain cases, Your Honor, where the conduct is so egregious that you are intended, you are presumed to intend the natural and probable consequences of your act. If I
a leg is more serious than a spine? Is that what you're saying?
No. But there is a difference. There is a logical difference between a doctor who touches or mistakes one area adjacent to the area of the operation. We had expert testimony that we put on. I wasn't trial counsel in the case, but there was expert testimony that was put on that this was a complication. This was a complication of the procedure, that you can, in fact, touch an adjacent area, even though the doctor believes he is still in the area he is supposed to be in.
All right, so suppose...
Doesn't the one who operates on the right leg instead of the left leg believe that he's supposed to... He knows?
I'm going to go ahead and
do this leg?
No, you would have a hard time arguing that, Judge. If I go into the hospital to have a mole removed from my right ear, and I wind up having my left foot amputated.
That's not the hypothetical.
But in other words, you can take an extreme case, and you can say, we're going to have a rule that covers an extreme case. It does not mean that you essentially do away with the concept that there is a distinction between intentional and unintentional torts when the plaintiff comes to court and says, I'm pleading negligence. They come into court and say, we're not saying this was intentional.
Yeah, my question.
All right. I'm going to ask the same question of your opposing counsel, but how would you formulate the test? I mean, we're talking about factual examples, the wrong leg, so on. And there's a whole lot of authority all over the... because courts all over the country are struggling with this problem of line drawing. How would you formulate the test?
Well, I would formulate the test as it has been formulated by the legislature under the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act. If in fact, in this court in Hagen versus Antonio, if the conduct is an inseparable part of the medical treatment, all right, my example, if you go in to have your ear fixed and you wind up without a left foot, that's not an inseparable part of the treatment. If you go in to have your right leg fixed and in fact the doctor operates on the left leg, that's not an inseparable part of the treatment.
If I go in for C7 and instead I have C4, I would think that a spinal doctor would know the difference.
Well, again, Your Honor, you can parse it out into close or difficult cases.
That's what we're trying to do.
But this isn't one of them. This isn't one of them because here there is no claim of intentional conduct to support.
Well, I think the analytical aspects of this, rather than the gross nature of this versus that, is probably a more fertile place to go. It seems to me that what you're saying is that the doctor intended to perform surgery at that disc level.
Yes.
No question.
Yes.
He did it.
Yes.
But the doctor didn't intend to purposely perform surgery outside informed consent. Right. And you have two levels of consent you think is required, or two levels of intent that you think is required before it's a battery.
Well,
you have to intend to actually perform the surgery, obviously. And what you're saying is you have to intend to perform the surgery at a place that was not within the informed consent of the patient, and that's a battery.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly right. There are many, many, many cases of medical malpractice where a doctor, in the course of dealing with a particular organ, right, will touch the tissue or impact the tissue of an adjacent organ. Nobody ever says, I believe, that that's a battery. That falls strictly under the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act. In this case, because the doctor believes that he is performing his operation on the intended organ. In this case, we believed we were performing the correct operation. There was only one operation, unlike Washburn. And Pugsley and Prevett are so completely distinguishable here from this case. If this case is a battery, then hundreds of medical malpractice cases are batteries, and you essentially gut the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act because it becomes strict liability. You don't have to have any expert testimony. You don't have to prove a breach of the standard of care. You don't have to prove proximate cause. Just have to prove that it happened. The legislature has gone in the completely opposite direction.
Well, is a solution to this, because one of the problems in this case is the trial judge didn't believe, if I understand correctly, that the patient had consented to this as a possible natural complication. It wasn't in the written consent forms. So isn't part of the answer to expand, you know, and have in writing, well, here are all the risks?
Well, yes, and there was a debate at the trial about whether or not the risks were properly identified or not. The problem is it did not get tried the way a medical malpractice case should be tried, with contesting expert testimony on the question of standard of care.
But wouldn't that push the case over into that territory if, because how can someone say it's a battery when I consented that this is a possible complication?
Well, yes, I mean, that would... If you had a consent form which said, right, although you can't consent to negligence, right, so, but if you had a consent form that said, I consent to the possibility that although this is supposed to be C6, C7, it could turn out to be C5, C6, because it's a tough area to distinguish where you are, then...
It's never clean like in the anatomy textbooks.
It's never clean. I'm not sure that consent, frankly, would be valid because you'd still have the question of whether it was negligence. You can't consent in advance to negligence.
But that then pushes you into, well, was it negligence or not? And then you standard of care and experts and all, that's what you would get into.
It does, but whether or not the consent in this case was good, bad, or indifferent, this case did not get tried properly because it got sidetracked into this area of technical battery, which short-circuited the entire statutory framework that the legislature has put down. I agree with the court that you can posit hypotheticals that become difficult. You can posit closer hypotheticals. But this case, to us, represents an entire doing away with the notion that there is a distinction between intentional and unintentional torts when the plaintiff comes in and says, I'm pleading an unintentional tort, but I'm going to stick the word technical in front of the word battery, and I'm going to go all the way around the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act by doing
so
that.
So from your point of view, it's not really the nomenclature, battery, negligence, whatever. From your point of view, it is we have field preemption by a statutory scheme,
yes.
And it has certain presuppositions of how these cases would be worked out, and the principal one is you have to have expert testimony.
Yes, sir. And if you come in and you claim that there is no intent, but then you say, but you touched something outside of what you were supposed to touch, technical battery, trump card, game over. No Virginia Medical Malpractice Act, no expert testimony, even though we had expert testimony. Don't have to meet it, don't have to discuss standard of care, don't have to discuss proximate causation, because we're going to call this a technical battery because you touched an adjacent area.
And that's because, in your view, that touching an adjacent organ is something that is routine,
yes.
Unfortunately, and
yes.
As a result, it would require expert testimony to determine whether it was negligent, and it couldn't possibly be an intentional battery.
But
of course, I'm confident you understand why judges and justices change the facts and then pose a new question.
I do.
We have to find out how far your theory goes.
I do indeed.
So you have suggested that somehow the spine is a scary proposition. You suggested that doctors would not know the difference between one level and the other. I hope that's not routine.
No.
But surely doctors know the difference between the right leg and the left leg.
Yes.
All right, so how does this work as a proposition? What's the theory that you would apply? You're writing the opinion in the court. You've got the pen. You've got the paper. What does the decision say?
Per curiam, judgment reversed.
You're going to have to work a little harder than that. All right. How do you write the court's opinion?
I would write the opinion by saying, first of all, you cannot come into court in a case and say it's unintentional, and then argue your case based upon intentional. So, for purposes of Dr. Mayer and this case, the opinion can't the situation cannot stand that way.
But they non-suited that.
Huh?
They non-suited the negligence action.
They did, but that's
the only thing. The only thing that's pending is a battery. So that doesn't work. Write the opinion for me. This is a wonderful opportunity for you. It's the only one you have to write the opinion.
You promise me you'll accept it. I'll write it. All right. The accepted limitation on transforming unintentional torts into intentional torts has already been set forth by this court in Bannister versus Mitchell, I don't know, 100 years ago or something like that, where there is a willful, reckless, or dangerous act which may result in the injury to any one of a number of others, such as shooting into a crowd. That is how you transform an unintentional act, which is what is pleaded here, and what negligence is in medical malpractice, into an intentional act. Have you done something willful, reckless, or dangerous? All right? Courts can make that judgment. Then there'll be appeals, but courts can make that judgment. If I cut off the left leg when I should shoot the right ear, that's willful, reckless, and dangerous. If I go in drunk and I do a right leg instead of a left leg, willful, reckless, and dangerous.
Well, in those cases, we wouldn't need expert testimony anyway.
I'm sorry?
In those cases, there wouldn't be any need for expert testimony.
There may not be. There may not be if it's that egregious. But in a case, in a standard medical malpractice case, garden variety, hundreds of them every year, where the allegation is, you did something wrong. You did something improper here. Every single one of those, you could stick technical in front of battery, and that's the end of the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act. Maybe not every single one, but the vast majority of them. So I would write the opinion, I would say, there may be close cases where it's difficult. There are egregious cases where it's not difficult. But if it is a standard claim that what you have done, which is part of the, as the court said in Hagen versus Antonio, if it's an inseparable part of the treatment, if the problem arises out of an inseparable part of the treatment, you have got negligence, the field is preempted, it has to go under the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act.
Right, now you've answered my question. Or my colleagues, do you have any other questions you want to ask? All right, your time has expired. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Hey, please, the court. My name is Gary Mims, and I'm here on behalf of Catherine Osborne as administrator of the estate of Michael Osborne. If I may, let me begin by answering your question. It's very simple, and I think you are on the point. It has to do with the consent form. This is a battery case, as this court has held in Pugsley, Woodbury, and Washburn, which came about after the Medical Malpractice Act. All that has to happen, which happens in many, many malpractice cases, I tried one not recently where there was an injury to the spinal cord during the surgery. I tried it on negligence, not battery, because the consent form said, and the conversation with the patient said, this is a hard place to see. I might damage adjacent structures. It's a perfectly good system. In this case, had Dr. Mayer...
But, counsel, you can't consent to negligence.
Exactly.
So you could have, in theory, if you take your logic as far as it goes, you could have, in theory, pled a technical battery in that case.
I would have... No, I couldn't.
Why not?
With all due respect. Because the issue with not being able to consent to negligence is why negligence and battery are separate. So in that instance, if I had proceeded on a battery claim, I would have lost because the patient consented to the fact that the surgeon might damage the spinal cord. And so that was in the context of the consent. Let me give it to you a little, maybe in the case
consent
that might be...
might damage. I mean, that's... Is that what the patient's consenting to? I'm consenting to you operating on the wrong...
For the purpose of battery, yes, but not for the purpose of negligence. And here's the reason, is that this, when we... Let me give an example. When you got into laparoscopic procedures, it was difficult for surgeons to visualize the anatomy. And so surgeons would say, if I'm doing a laparoscopic removal of the gallbladder, that I might injure an adjacent organ or bile duct or hepatic duct in doing that procedure. So he intends to cut a duct. It's the wrong duct. But he explained to the patient before that that might happen in his consent. I would argue that in that consent, the patient has gotten rid of the battery claim for that.
He still might be able to prove it was negligence for him not to identify the appropriate structure, but that would be the distinction between consent.
So you can consent to the intentional tort, but you can't consent to the negligent tort?
Yes, because this court has held many times that unless consent is an issue in the case, consent doesn't come in on a theory of negligence because you can't consent to the negligence.
No, I'm with you, but if you can't consent to the negligence, how can you consent to an intentional tort?
Because, and this goes back to trying to answer your question, because the system works properly the way it is. If in this case, Dr. Mayer had said, you know, there's 7 vertebrae. It's really messy in there, and it's hard for me to count to 7. So instead of doing C5-6, I might fuse C6-7. And the patient said, okay, I understand you might do that. I would not have a case for battery because the patient consented to the touching at C6-7.
See, I'm not understanding that. He's not consenting. He's just realizing there's a risk that you might do it, even though I'm not consenting to it. I understand there's a risk that might happen.
But I think all of these cases boil down to consent.
When it's informed consent.
Yes, sir.
Right? That's what we're talking about is, are you going into this with the understanding of possible complications and outcomes?
Yes, sir. And that's why it should be this way. If Dr. Mayer knew that this was, he tried to argue, which, by the way, was a trial judge who heard all the evidence and knew the law and ruled in favor of the appellee in this case. If Dr. Mayer maintained, as he did in this case, that this is a complication of the procedure, that I might not count properly and I might do the wrong level, then he should have told that to the patient. If he told that to the patient might have said, hey, I may not want this doctor. I may want to go to somebody else who can count better. Or say, okay, doc, I understand the fact that you might do the wrong level. And I would submit to the court that had this consent form been consent to do C5-6 as it was, and it also consented to the fact that the doctor might inadvertently do C6-7, then I think the claim for battery would not exist because I think he would have technically consented to that issue, and then he would have to proceed solely on the issue of negligence to show that he deviated from the standard of care and not counting to the right vertebra before he did the procedure. This act was intentional. I never argued that he didn't intend to do a fusion and discectomy. The act was intended. It was not intended to be done at that level.
Right, let me ask you the same question, which is, now, I understand one solution is to beef up the consent forms and be more comprehensive so the patient is properly informed of all the risks. So that's one answer. But there are always going to be some unanticipated possible complications. So how would you write the test for policing this line between a battery? Because obviously, I mean, just it has to be a difference between operating on the wrong leg and some adjacent tissue that may be a different organ, but, you know, the person didn't expressly consent to. How would you write the test?
I would write it the way this court did in Washburn. I would write it in the sense that if these cases that come about, let's see if I come up with another example. Suppose the doctor is doing a hysterectomy and is going to remove an organ, and he has the lyse adhesions where the uterus is up against the bowel. And he never intends to cut the bowel. He's just lysing adhesions. And in doing so, he devascularizes the area so that subsequently a perforation forms. He has not committed the battery. He never intended to injure the bowel. He was intending to do something else. In this case, he was intending to do surgery at C6-7. He was just mistaken. It's not a case where the scalpel slipped and he accidentally operated on C6-7. He removed the disc, put a piece of bone in there, and put plates and screws in that level. They were all intentional acts, and they were intentional acts that went outside the consent of the patient. And so,
let me explore that just a little bit. Obviously, there's some problems with every one of the opportunities to write our decision. If this is confined to scope of consent, how would you handle a situation where a doctor has informed consent about, we'll make it a mastectomy, and they get into the operation and they see involved lymph nodes that are not a part of the consent? Now, what a conundrum for a doctor. If I hit the, if I take out the lymph nodes, I may be guilty of a battery. If I don't take them out, I may be guilty of negligence. Now, that's not a rule we would want to have for doctors, is it? Or patients?
No, sir. But I believe this court has addressed that issue, and they said that in Kaufman versus Garnett, which is a case where a football player was tackled by his coach to show him how to tackle somebody, in that case, the court held that the tort of battery is an unwanted touching which is neither consented to, excused, or justified. And in the case you're talking about, when he does the mastectomy and notices some other tumor that's in there or something else that needs to be removed that's life-threatening, then I would argue that it falls outside the battery because it was excused or justified. There was a reason that justified his going outside that point. Every consent form I've ever seen has language in it that says something to the effect of, I give consent that if I find another dangerous condition in here, I can remove it. And everybody always checks that box. But it's easily addressed because if you look at Kaufman and we talk about battery, it's an unwanted touching, but without excuse or justification. So if the doctor in this case said, hey, look, I was doing C5-6 and I realized that if I didn't stabilize C6-7, this patient was going to be paralyzed, then I think it would still be an argument of battery, but I think I would lose because the trier of fact would probably find that it was justified for him to do C6, C7, which is why my request for admissions in this case were very specific in asking him to admit that there was no therapeutic value in operating on C6, C7. Because frankly, if he thought that, if he could make an argument there was a therapeutic reason to do C6, 7 instead of C5, 6, then the trier of fact might say, you know what, that's not a battery because there was an excuse or justifiable reason. I think that when we look at this, and I want to go back to your question about how we mold this, I think the system works really well because I think if truly, honestly, in this case, Dr. Mayer thought that a complication of the procedure was actually operating on the wrong level, he really should have sat down with his patient and explained that. And it should have been in his consent form. And if it wasn't his consent form, then again, I understand the court says that's illogical to say I consent you operating at the wrong level. But I think that's the only answer to this.
You're consenting to a procedure with possible risks is what the informed consent's all about.
Yes, but it's beyond possible risk because you have to identify what those possible risks are, such as the possible risk of doing C6, C7. If you take the appellant's argument in this case, then if you take a patient, let's say patient A is in the hospital to have an appendectomy and patient B is in the hospital to have his gallbladder removed, and they remove patient A's gallbladder and vice versa for patient B, there would be no cause of action in Virginia for battery. Because he wants you to get rid of battery as a tort recognizable under the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act.
And well, it's not like the plaintiff wouldn't have any recovery. It would be an obvious recovery for negligence. You wouldn't even need expert testimony. You'd never get to trial.
Well, I agree you wouldn't need expert testimony, but why wouldn't that be a battery?
Let me ask you this. The negligence here was the failure to locate precisely the C6, C7 level and know that that's not C5, C6, right? That was a negligent act by the doctor, according to your theory.
That might have been a negligent act if there was an expert who testified that was negligence to do that. The defense experts in this case, which were heard by the court, by the way, over my objection, the defense experts in this case said it is not negligence to count the wrong disc.
That's just where I'm going. So, hypothetically, suppose, just for the sake of my question, that the defense experts are right, that this particular spine on this particular patient, given the anatomy of this particular patient's condition, that was a mistake that a reasonable and prudent doctor might make unintentionally. Isn't in the end this case nothing more than that? Because obviously the doctor did not intend to operate on the wrong level of the spine. But of course, when he puts the scalpel in there, he intends the act of putting the scalpel in there. But in the end, it's still fundamentally a negligence claim.
It's fundamentally a battery case because he didn't inform the patient of that possibility that he might do the wrong level. That's where I get to the common sense argument here. If, in fact, that is a complication that is known to happen, as the defense tried to argue in this case, then they should have told the patient.
And yeah, but informed consent, we've talked about these concepts. It seems to me they're very different. Informed consent is not the same thing as battery, justified or unjustified. It's actually not the same thing as negligence. It has everything to do with the duty to inform, to make good judgments, as opposed to what you do when you actually open the skin up and start working on the spine of the patient.
With all due respect, I think informed consent is at the heart of this case because I think battery is the unwanted touching, the touching of a person without his or her consent and without justification. And the reason that they get consent, is so that they have the right to perform surgery.
All right, let me ask you this, and my last question, I promise. Suppose this consent form was perfectly proper and it said, you're consenting to C5, C6, but it's possible, I'm not intending to do it and I'm not anticipating doing it, but it's possible I'm going to get it wrong and actually fuse C6, C7. Will you consent to that? The consent, in my mind, if I'm a patient, is, well, I see there's a risk there, but no, I'm not consenting to you doing C6, C7. I understand if it happens, we'll talk about negligence later, but I'm not consenting to it. I just realize there's a risk you might do it without my consent. I mean, that's the way a patient would look at that.
That is the way a patient would look at that, Your Honor, and that's why I've forgotten the name of the expert that they had whose deposition was taken. But when I cross-examined that expert who was trying to say that this is a known complication, I said to him, I said, Doctor, have you ever once in your entire career told a patient that you might accidentally do this complication and argue and operate at the wrong level? And his answer was the same as Dr. Myers. His answer was no. I've never told anybody that because it doesn't happen. And Judge, I have a hard time understanding.
I don't know how that helps your argument. What it means to me is clearly negligence.
It can be both. And what I'm suggesting to the court is that if the doctor advised him under your scenario that I might do C6, C7, then I would have been forced, I believe, to go forward on a claim of negligence alone because of that consent. I think battery has to do with consent. And
before you sit down,
I have a question.
And you have one too? Before you sit down, we've talked about a lot of hypotheticals, some of them on the far reaches of experience. I want to get down to the analysis. He says that there's two intents involved in a battery. I did intend it to operate at this level, and I intended that it was wrong. That's a battery. That's what he says.
Yes, sir.
Are there two levels of intent for your theory or only one?
One.
So what? Flesh it out. What is it?
Well, it is that you intended the act, and the question is whether or not you had consent to do what you did. And a consent form, as I would suggest to this court, that consent should be, if you think that the anatomy is so complicated in the cervical spine that you can't count to seven, you should have that frank discussion with your patient, and the patient should either consent
Part of the dilemma is that consent and intent are very close in their rhetoric. I'm talking about intent, not consent. He says if you have intent to operate at this level and you have intent to do it improperly, that's a battery. And he says it requires both. What do you say?
I say one. To have two, it would have to be a criminal act. I mean, really, if you think about it, if you intend to do the wrong level and you intend to do an injury, you've committed a crime, not just a civil wrong. I think all it takes is you to do an act that exceeds the scope of the consent, as this court has held in Pugsley, Washburn, and Woodbury.
So my question is, you said that a battery is an unwanted touching without consent or justification.
Yes, sir.
Could justification be you performing a medical act and your touching is within the standard of medical care?
If your touching was unintentional, for example,
what if it was intentional? Because with the battery, we know that touching is unwanted, so it's unconsented. So the question is whether or not it's justified. Wouldn't that be a justification? This is something that just happens when someone's performing surgery, that you touch this particular organ.
It's the intentional touching. It's not like I'm going in and I'm trying to sever something and I accidentally go too deep and I cut the bowel that I never intended to cut. This is a case where you cut the bowel on purpose and you say, oh my goodness, I cut the bowel, I thought I was cutting something else.
Right.
That's the distinction I'm making between intent. In this case, he intended to do a discectomy infusion. That wasn't an accident. It wasn't like he placed the screw at C5-6 and it inadvertently went into C6-7. He did a discectomy infusion at a level beyond the consent of the patient, and without informing the patient so the patient could accept that consent.
Right, and I guess the question I have is, using your example, what if you're operating and you're trying to operate on the liver and you cut an intestine and you did it on purpose, but you thought it was the liver? I just made a mistake. I thought it was the liver. Am I justified in doing that if there's an expert who says, yeah, it happens all the time? When somebody consents to having their liver operated on, it's easy for a doctor to lose his way and end up thinking that the intestine is the liver.
In a negligence count, yes. In a battery count, no. And let me see if I can try to explain this again.
Well, why wouldn't that be a justification for the battery, which has been done
by
the doctor?
But that would be a factual question for the trier of fact to decide.
Right, and that's the question I have. In that particular instance, wouldn't experts really come in the battery case in determining whether or not there's a justification for the unwanted touching?
Well, I suppose that argument could be made, that you're suggesting here, is that there's a justification for his misidentifying the liver for whatever part of
right.
it was. That, but under your definition, this court's definition of battery, it's an unwanted touching without justification or excuse, and that's a factual question. And in this case, that factual question was decided by the trier of fact. The trier of fact disregarded the argument advanced by the defendant that this was a complication. It was a justification. He found that this exceeded the scope of the consent, and all parties, Your Honor, all parties agreed that the sole issue for this judge to decide, because before he went back in chambers, he said, let me make sure I got this straight, Mr. Mims and Mr. Rawls, is the only issue I need to decide whether or not this exceeded the scope of consent, and everybody said yes, because we were operating under the same umbrella of what consent is and what consent means.
Well, Mr. Rawls didn't say yes. He just didn't say anything.
He may not have said anything, but I think he acquiesced.
All right. Thank you. Now, I have to make a decision. You're 4.5 minutes over time. You were 2 over time. You get 1 more minute.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Your Honor. Your Honors, what does the court do with Glisson versus Loxley? Glisson versus Loxley has to get overruled then, because Glisson was exactly the point we're making here. There was a consent to do an arthroscopy, right? The doctor did an arthroscopic surgery instead. There was a battery claim. This court said you cannot have a battery claim there because of the Virginia Medical Malpractice Act. It is negligence, and the VMMA applies. That's all we're. Glisson can't stand in the face of this. There was an oral discussion. There was evidence of an oral discussion of hardware going in the wrong place. In other words, of that in the consent discussion with the plaintiff. The problem here is that the plaintiff doesn't have an expert. This isn't an issue that can be decided without an expert. We had experts. Not that the guy counted wrong. That's not what the problem was here. The problem was the habitus, the body habitus of the patient was large. You can make this mistake in a large, potentially obese patient.
All right, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for very, very interesting and well-done arguments, but it has to come to a close. Call the next case.
Thank you, Ron.